Welcome to Holding Priority Podcast number one. This is our Thunder Junction, also known as the Hee-Haw set review. I'm Aaron.
I'm Sam.
I'm normally a combo player, so I like really flashy, cool cards.
I like value. All the value you can get for the least amount of mana you can play.
And we both picked 10 cards that we're going to go through from this newest set. These are going to be cards that we just think are either cool or you'll see at your commander night. No promises that these will be CDH viable. We just wanted to pick 10 cards we thought were cool that probably should see some play or should be something that people at least try out in their decks.
Or just interesting.
Alright, let's get into them. Alright, so let's get into our top 10. Aven Interrupter, this was one I picked. So it is a one colorless white creature bird rogue, flash, flying. When Aven Interrupter enters the battlefield, exile target spell, it becomes plotted. Plotted means its owner may cast it as a sorcery on a later turn without paying its mana cost. Spells your opponents cast from graveyards or from exile cost two more to cast. It is a 2/2.
So pretty much a 2/2 for 3 that takes something off of the battlefield seems pretty good.
Yeah. It also has flash, so you can use it to plot your opponent's counterspells, and then they can only cast their counterspells at sorcery speed, which makes them useless, which is awesome. Kind of funny, yeah. I think it's good just because white kind of needs interaction. It is 3, so it's pretty expensive, but you get a 2/2 flying body out of it. It has flash, and then on top of it, spells your opponents cast from graveyards or from exile cost 2 more to cast. So if somebody's going to be doing a Underworld Breach combo, you pretty much can flash this out and just wreck their plan.
That's what I was thinking. If you just flash it out on a breach line, then you're about to draw a bunch of cards.
Yeah, and also it ruins like any squeak combos or any food chain combos. So the fact that you can flash it out and just ruin popular CDH combos is pretty good. And then on top of it, it's basically kind of like deflecting SWAT for 3. Where you're not directly stopping a counterspell, but you are exiling it off the stack and then making them pay 2 later. So like, let's say somebody Mindbreak traps you if you have 3 mana open, which, I mean, probably not. but you know, you can just take that spell off the stack and then they just keep it in exile and they can't cast it anymore.
Or just whatever spell they're playing on their turn and you want to have a 2/2 beater on your turn, you can just flash it out.
It's yeah.
Pretty a solid card all around, I think.
Yeah, the thing that's good about it is you exile target spell. So it can be a creature spell, it can be anything. There's no restriction to it.
Mm.
All right, let's go to the next one. High Noon. We're staying in white. We're going to do them by color ID. So there's really not any like hierarchy to these, just 10 cards we thought cool. So High Noon is an enchantment for 2. Each player can't cast more than 1 spell each turn. 4 and a red, sacrifice High Noon. It deals 5 damage to any target.
Awesome. Rule of loss.
Yeah. So I used to play stacks very heavily. I still do. But I used to have a deck that was entirely stacks. And the difference between a 2-drop stacks piece and a 3-drop stacks piece is huge. Basically, High Noon, you could get out on turn 1 pretty easily, especially in CDH. And, you know, everything else that's 3, you're probably not going to get it out. And the other thing I like about it is for 5, if you decide that you're going to go off and you have excess mana, you can just get rid of the restriction at any point, and then deal 5 damage to any target.
I think also what's kind of neat about this one is you'll have your opponents kind of watching their life totals. Or if you're about to get beat down by a creature, 5 damage is solid to just drop it off the board.
Yeah, and most of the time you're running stacks, you're running white-green stacks somewhat. This is white-red, so it does restrict the color ID of what you can do. But, like, let's say in Rocko, you start a infinite mana Eternal Witness loop. You can actually kill the table with a Stax piece. You can cast it, sacrifice it, deal 5 damage, get it back with E-Witness, do it again, over and over. So it's like the Lightning Bolt combo, but you can do it with a Stax piece, which... to me, makes it really good. Like, you do have to have infinite mana, because, you know, what, seven to do 5 damage is pretty expensive, but if you're infinite, the difference between 1 for a lightning bolt or 7 for a enchantment's not too bad.
I feel like how the games go, though, this would be played somewhere around turn 1 or 2, and then at turn 3 or 4 or 5, now you have this thing that can just sneak up on you as well, which... I like it.
Yeah, it being two is a big deal. Deafening Silence was pretty much the turn one Stax piece that you were hoping for in your hand. Just because 3 mana turn one is pretty hard to do. But now, High Noon, you could have a land and a Mox Diamond and drop this. And if you're first, no one else can really drop all of their rocks. So I think it's pretty good. I think it'll actually see a lot of play. I think the card's only like $1 now, which, I mean, you have to be white-red, so it only goes in a couple of decks, but, I mean, this will go in Winota, this will go in Blood Pod, this will go in Rocko. I think it's really good. All right, next card.
Dust Animus. So this is one I kind of picked. It reads... Flying, if you control 5 or more untapped lands, Dust Animus enters the battlefield with 2/1/1 counters and a lifelink counter on it. It has plot 2. So initially it's a 2, 1 colorless, 1 white for a 2/3 beater. I'm all about those quick hits in Blue Farm. It also gives you some play to late game. If you get stuck in something, having a 4, you know, 4/5 beater is pretty nasty. Plus the lifelink, if you needed to pull back some mana for an Abnaz. Just in general, I think that it's a decent card. Even if it's just for its base without the 1/1 counters.
Yeah, I mean, it's bigger than its mana cost. So this is a 2 CMC spell that... at the very least has a keyword, flying, and it's a 2/3. And it's a spirit, which is pretty relevant in mostly casual, but like spirits are pretty good. And then you can plot it for the same cost too, and just say like, hey, I know I'm going to drop a land. Like this is turn 4, I know I'm going to drop a land next turn. For 0, I'll get out a 4/5 flying lifelink. And then all of a sudden I will also be able to cast another spell. So I'll have a free storm count, which is also pretty cool. So if you're trying to, you know, do like brain freeze or something like that, it ups your storm count for free, which is good. It's a flying lifelink 4/5 blocker. So it'll kill a Krom if you're going against another blue farm deck or if you're just going against blue farm in general. And the other thing that's good about it is, I don't play Tyam, but with Tyam, it's 2/1/1 counters and a lifelink counter, so it comes into the battlefield with 3 counters on it that Tyam can eat for 0.
Like I said, it's a low cost with a lot of value in the text. I do think the plot mechanic, is a little interesting because you really get very little value on that turn, but the next turn could be... you know, plotted with multiple cards, so then you're dropping a lot of cards, and then you have your mana up for the next couple spells, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, what's cool about it is it's also just one color. It's just white, so it fits into any deck that's white, and then anything that cares about counters. So let's say that you're doing I always forget the name of the artifact, the Cauldron.
Agathas?
Yeah, Agathas. If you're doing Agathas, it comes in with 1/1 counters, so it immediately gets all of those activated abilities that you put on Agatha.
pretty nasty.
Yeah. I think people try it out. I think it'll go in Tyam 100%. I don't know if it'll be good enough for Blue Farm, but the fact that for free you can get an extra storm counter, and also you have this big flying blocker so that you have not only Chrom, but then a 4-5 lifelink is pretty good.
I think that with the format changing a bit to later game, a lot of these cards are going to see more play and be more viable than some of the old stuff where you had to just run out your combo as quick as possible.
Yeah, I also like that you can just see that's in your hand and go like, oh, I don't really have much to do this turn. I'm just gonna put it aside, and you know, this will be a treat later on.
That's what I'm thinking too, because sometimes you can get stuck with nothing really to do in your hand, and just paying two to get it back later, I think is pretty decent.
Yeah.
And it's cast, it looks like. So if you're trying to run your storm,
yeah,
it's part of your storm count.
Cool.
All right, this is another one I picked. I do not know how well it'll be in competitive. However, I do think that this is an interesting card. Geralf the Fleshwright.
I think it's Geralf. Like Geralf? Joffrey from Toys R Us.
The giraffe?
Yeah.
Whenever you cast a spell during your turn, other than your first spell that turn, create a 2/2 black zombie rogue creature token. Whenever a zombie enters the battlefield under your control, put a 1/1 counter on it for each other zombie that entered the battlefield under your control this turn. So, with this, it really looks like you could change your win con to beater. Like, you cast you a bunch of little spells, and then maybe you cast Chrom since he's a zombie, and now you have Chrom with, I don't know, a few 1/1 counters on it. It just seems nasty. And then if you're in Blue Farm, like I play mostly, you get a bunch of swingers. And that's always good to try to get through. Kill a creature on your opponent's side or just hit them directly. And then you continue the combo. I think it's decent.
Yeah, what I like about it specifically is it doesn't have what we've seen on a lot of cards of, like, only do this one turn, or, like, only do this once a turn. Like, it's just, you play Geralf, and then when you cast your next spell during that turn, you immediately get that value. So let's say you play Geralf, and then you have that zero-cost plotted spirit that we were going over earlier. You play him for three. You get a 4/5 flying lifelink spirit, and then on top of it you get a 2/2 blue black zombie rogue, so you can immediately see the value of Geralf for 3 mana with the plot mechanic. Or if you just follow it up with, like, play Geralf, play a mana rock, all of a sudden you have a 2/3 and a 2/2 and a mana rock, and then with that mana rock you might get another 2/2. And I think this is, I don't think that this will see CDH play. I think it's something that could surprise people, and then all of a sudden you have, like, a big army. But what's cool with it is you could put it down, and then if you're going to try to do a combo that requires a lot of pieces, you have a backup of, like, okay, you know, I'm going to try to do this combo. If anybody stops me, I have Chrom, and I'll just kill them if they counter my stuff. Like, they're just going to be out of the game as a punishment. Like,
that's what I was going to go with is, let's say I start the breach line. My storm gets up to 8. If Geralf's on the field, the value is still being placed on each creature that's coming out. And then if you do counter it, now you have to deal with an army, be it the next turn or be it on Chrom this turn.
Yeah, I think it's funny. So whenever I was reading this card, in my head, I will notice that sometimes my brain will try to balance the cards. Whenever I read this at the last part, it said 1/1 counter on it for each zombie that entered the battlefield under your control this turn. My brain said that you cast this turn. So, like, I didn't realize that the...
No, they get bigger.
Yeah, the 2/2 tokens get bigger by themselves. I think this is a good backup. Just because you're like, all right, I'm going to try my combo. I know I'm going to play a lot of spells. If somebody stops me, then everybody has to deal with a giant zombie army. And, you know, if I have enough mana, which, I mean, if you're failing a combo and you have, was it 5 mana for Krom, I don't really see how you have that 5 mana left over. You know, it seems like you could recover your combo, but...
Well, in some instances, you get to a point... Like, if you're doing the Teferi Displacer line.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a Rhystic Study.
Yeah.
For instance, they end up drawing an Odawara or a Baseju. Then that value of just him being on the field and then having big creatures.
So if you can't go... So if you do a Hullbreaker Horror line and you can't net any mana, you're at least going to have... infinitely big zombies. That's gonna be like kind of a pain to represent though, because normally whenever you just have a giant army, you'll be like, I have a billion 2/2 zombies, but now you'll have a 2/2, a 3/3, a 4/4, a 5/5, a 6/6, a 7/7, all the way up to a billion zombie.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Any card that has the win con on it is notable.
Yeah.
And being that it's only 3, will it get CEDH play? I don't know, but I do know that it's got a lot of value on one little card.
I also think it's funny what Magic decides that they're going to do as far as like, oh, only do this once a turn, or only do this as a sorcery, and then all of a sudden they're like, yeah, for 3, we'll just give you a 2/3 that just makes as many zombies as you want. We'll also slap Rogue on it, so like, you know, they're outlaws, too, for some reason. Like, I like how sometimes they're like, oh, no, only do this once a turn. Like, this is too good. And then they're just like, just get as many zombies as you want. They're all rogues. You know, like, you can make them unblockable if they're rogues. Like, it's kind of dumb.
If you're playing casual and have a Dimir zombie deck, this goes in it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, isn't there a Dimir... Assassin. I was about to say... There's Assassin that if you deal damage with an Assassin and kill one person, you kill everybody at the table. But these are rogues, not Assassins. Yeah. I wonder if the upcoming Assassin's Creed set, I think they're doing Rogue Tribal as well. So maybe we'll get some, like, rogue benefits.
I definitely think it's interesting. If he would be a wizard, I could see some really dumb things happening.
Yeah.
Being that he's a warlock, fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if he was a wizard, he'd actually go in Sakishima.
Yeah, he'd be broken.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's still almost, maybe you could just do it for fun. What deck was humans viable with? Well, I mean, Blue Farm, too, if you have a Cavern of Souls, you're naming humans.
Yeah.
So that's
kind of... Uncounterable.
Yeah.
I think he's a piece you put on the board, and then a couple of turns down the line, you may get a creature or two in between, and then all of a sudden it's a big problem.
Yeah. I think this is fun, and then also if you guys know of any combos where, like, the subtype Rogue makes this much better, if you comment down below, I'm sure we're missing something there. So if we get comments of like, oh, this card goes crazy with rogues, or like, I haven't really been paying the Assassin's Creed set. I don't even know if the Assassin's... I guess the Assassin's Creed is probably doing a whole bunch of Assassins. But yeah, if you guys know of cool rogue cards to combo with this, let us know.
Yep, for sure.
And then let's go to the next one. So I picked this one. It's a Slickshot Lockpicker. When Slickshot Lockpicker... So it's a 2 colorless and a blue. When it's a human rogue creature, when Slickshot Lockpicker enters the battlefield, Target instant or sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn. The flashback cost is equal to its mana cost. So flashback is, you may cast that card from your graveyard for its flashback cost, then exile it. You can plot it for 2 and a blue. So you may play 2 and exile this card from your hand, cast it as a sorcery on a later turn without paying its mana cost, plot only as a sorcery. So this is basically Snapcaster Mage. Snapcaster Mage at home. It's definitely not as good as Snapcaster Mage. Snapcaster Mage does have flash on it, so you can instant speed pop it out. But the only thing that I like about Slickshot Lockpicker is you can cast it for free. So let's say, you know, you have a spell that mills half of somebody's library. You cast that spell, and then for 0, you Slickshot Lockpicker, and then you get to cast that spell again. You do exile it after, which is kind of scary with flashback cost, and you do have to pay the flashback cost. But it's basically, what spell do I want to cast twice on my turn? And I can do that for free, which is really big in Commander, because you can only have one of those cards. I know that everybody's just kind of saying, like, well, if you're running this, why don't you just run Snapcaster Mage? It's like, well, you would run Snapcaster Mage and this. So you would have two different cards in your deck that you could get old spells back in mono blue.
Snapcaster is what colors again?
He's just blue.
Just blue?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that it's interesting. You could plot it and then maybe your Adnaz got destroyed.
Yeah.
And then you just throw it back out. Definitely this plot stuff is a lot more set up for your next couple of turns.
Yeah.
However, you can always... there's always value there. Like, I know I'm going to have a good card in my graveyard at some point that I want to do.
Yeah, I think really the only thing that kind of stops this from being good is that the plot cost is 3. That's kind of expensive. So, like, let's say I try to Adnaz. I probably spent all 5 on the Adnaz. Well, you can Adnaz as an instant. So you're probably doing that on an end step. It gets stopped. And then you would, on your next turn, plot Slickshot Lockpicker, and then be like, my next turn, I'm going to try this again. You better hope you have another counter.
Yeah, definitely. What I think, though, is you plot it first, and you kind of have it sitting, and then you try to Adnaz. If it doesn't go through, you Adnaz again.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of value for an uncommon.
Yeah.
I like it.
The only thing that kind of sucks is you can only plot as a sorcery, so you have to do your Adnaz or your tutors at sorcery speed. So you can't, like, intuition on somebody's end step with a Slickshot Lockpicker.
No, but with intuition, let's say it gets countered.
Yeah.
On your turn, you can try to recast it. I think it gives second chance to one of these key piece spells.
Yeah, and I also like the thing that has over Snapcaster Mage. Snapcaster Mage, you have to have 2+. I think Snapcaster Mages do. You have to have 2+ whatever you want to do for the flashback cost. And at least with this, you can be like, I know at some point I will want to recast something from the graveyard. Let me plot it for 3, and then at any point in the game, I can just do it. Because whenever you put it in exile, it's safe. Like, there are some things, like, I think Rift Sweeper, that would take it out of exile, so you couldn't cast anymore. And then, of course, there's always Drannith that just would lock you out of it. But for the most part, for 3, you just go, okay, well, you know, on a later turn, this will be a little secret treat that I can sneak out onto the field.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Next one.
Okay, this one was just a fun card. So, Gessa the Hellraiser. It is Ward 2, pay 2 life. Skeleton zombies you control get 1/1 and have menace. Whenever you commit a crime, create two tapped blue and black zombie rogue creature tokens. This ability can only be triggered once a turn.
Yeah, I think this is funny compared to the other one, because the other one is just like, just make as many zombies as you want. They come out untapped. You know, and this one's just like, well, if you target somebody's stuff, so like, you have to cast a spell, and then the other one is just like, hey, if you cast a spell, just have a 2/2 zombie rogue untapped. And this one's like, well, if you cast a certain type of spell, you can make two, but they come in tapped, and you can also only do this once a turn.
When I looked at it, I mainly looked at the 1/1 and have menace. Like I said, I didn't think that this one was as good as the blue one. However, I mean, it's a fun looking card.
Yeah, I think it's funny that they just stuck Ward 2, Pay 2 Life on there too.
Yeah. I mean, not that it's real a real bad ward. I would rather have you pay mana. I guess you do, huh?
Yeah, and so it's 2 mana and also 2 life.
But yeah, that's definitely not as good as the other blue. However, the menace makes it funny. If you have them both, I could see it be.
Yeah, I don't think that anybody's really running Unala anymore. I think Talion kind of completely took that deck over, but I think this could be kind of a cool Talion include, where it's just like, okay, well, you know, every turn I counter something, I get a little treat of 2/2 blue black zombie rogues.
With menace.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, and then she stays alive. They're 3/3 with menace. So, like, let's say you commit a crime on every single person's turn, which is unlikely, but it's 6 3/3s with menace. So all of a sudden you've put 18 damage out on the board just for doing your job on top of whatever you got with Talion Pings. And then if you're playing Unala, like, you don't play on your turn. You play on everybody else's turn. So yeah. I think that's kind of interesting. I don't think it's gonna bring Unala back or anything like that, but I don't think it'll be seen much, but I think it is a fun idea.
Definitely. Again, just a card I thought was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not saying any of these are sweaty. We're just saying, like, hey, these look fun, and if you throw them into your deck, you get bonus points from us. This is Insatiable Avarice. It's black, and then plus, so I didn't realize that these spree cards, they have a little plus in the corner. You can't really see them on the black cards very well, but right after the mana symbol, you know that you can cast these for more. So spree is choose one or more additional costs. Additional costs have to be paid, I believe, once you cast the spell and you have to announce them. Could be wrong. If so, let me know, but let's say you want to do all modes of this, it's 5. And then what you get for all modes of this is search your library for a card, shuffle it, put it on top, and then you draw 3 cards and lose 3 life. It's sorcery speed, so that target player draws 3 cards and loses 3 life. You're probably never going to target anybody other than yourself. Just because you can't instant speed cause somebody to lose the game with, like, a Thoracle combo or something like that. So it being sorcery kind of holds it back. But, I mean, it's also a 5-cost tutor that you get the card you tutored for and 2 more cards, which is pretty good to have that option. And then for 3, it's an Imperial Seal for 3.
I think that and cards always have a place in decks. Anything that can do multiple things is great. I would say the biggest downside about this one is for 1 mana, I don't really think it does a whole lot of anything.
It does nothing for 1 mana.
So you need at least 3, unless you're just trying to cast for Storm, because I guess you could cast it and it not do anything, and then you're...
I think you have to choose 1 or more additional costs. I don't think that you're allowed to cast it for 1.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess so. I guess you would have to have it for 3. That's such a weird thing to not just make it for three.
Yeah, I mean, if we're wrong, like, please comment and let us know. These are new cards, and honestly, I haven't really looked up the rulings on them. But I mean, it says spree, choose one or more additional costs. I guess additional costs you don't have to pay. You could choose it and then not. Like,
yeah, I think you could cast it and then it just not do anything. But at the end of the day.
Yeah, you could. So you would cast it as a sorcery speed for black, and then you would choose one or more additional costs, but I don't think you would be forced to pay it. You could just cast it for black, choose to, and then not pay it? I don't know.
I think that it's interesting you could get three cards as well as have a tutor, and if you really wanted to, it could be three for three cards.
Yeah,
which isn't bad.
I mean, this is great in Rowan.
Yeah.
I mean, not that Rowan really sees play, but it's five for a tutor, draw three cards, lose three life. No, you still have to pay additional costs, though, because Rowan only discounts what you would cast it for. So, like, commander tax is an additional cost you always have to play.
This is more to get her started.
Yeah, but for three black to get her started, which isn't terrible.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely better tutors. However,
yeah.
Out of the set that they even, the fact that they even put in a tutor is cool.
Yeah, we don't see the four cost tutors directly to hand. I don't know if for one more we would see this one, but I mean, it's always a cool option, like. You could run a mono black all tutors, you know, deck.
And it could also be played in with a combo of all tutor to top of deck, and then for three, draw.
Oh.
So like, let's say you mystical tutor.
Yeah. So like for six, you could put one out because you'd mystical. And then you'd search, and you'd have to shuffle again. So you couldn't put them both on top.
You could just draw. So what I'm saying is you just it's just a draw for three. So you could get three cards and put a card to top.
Yeah.
By no means is that mana efficient. However, I think that it's interesting that for three, you draw three, lose three.
Yeah, I was thinking in my head that you could Imperial Seal. And then you could cast this for five and get two tutored cards and an extra. But that, it wouldn't work because you have to shuffle every time you search.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think it's interesting that they threw one in.
Yeah, why is it on the list? It's a tutor. That's why.
yeah, for sure. Black tutor to hand.
Yeah. Well, to top and then to hand. If you want.
Top or hand.
Yeah. All right. It's good. It's a tutor.
Oh man,
Tiny Bones, the pickpocket. So I was initially really excited about this card. I thought this was going to be the card of the set. So Tiny Bones, the pickpocket, he's one black pip. Legendary creature, skeleton rogue, death touch. When Tiny Bones, the pickpocket, deals combat damage to a player, you may cast target non-land permanent card from that player's graveyard, and mana of any type can be spent to cast that spell. 1/1. So I thought this was going to be mono black Ragavan. And it is, but it isn't. So, Tiny Bones, turn one, kind of sucks. So you print them out, and it does stop people from using their Jeweled Lotus or their Lotus Petals. But for the most part, you want things already in the graveyard with Tiny Bones, so that you can put him out and then pressure that person, where it's like, if I swing with Tiny Bones, you're either going to have to sacrifice something to a death touch, or I'm going to get this really good thing out of your graveyard.
I think the big thing about Tiny Bones, honestly, to me, is it's a legendary creature for one.
Yeah.
For Sisse.
Yeah.
Or it's a, I'm going to swing in, block it if you want.
Yeah. He also turns on your Moxamber.
True.
Turn one. Yeah.
True. Is he better than Ragavan? I don't think so. I do think that he's the most comparable, I guess, at that point. I mean, if you wanted to do single color value, you could have Tiny Bones, Ragavan, Sarah's Ascendant type of stuff. Those are all decent.
Yeah, I think he's good. I just don't think he's, like, as mindless as Ragavan and Sarah Ascendant. Like, you can't just go, all right, I've got Tiny Bones in my opening hand. Let's slap him down, you know, like...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he requires a lot of thought, which I think is good in a card. Like, I think for one, he's a great value, and then on top of it, if you think somebody's just going to go off mana-wise with a whole bunch of Zero Rocks that they sack, then you can just be like, all right, well, I put Tiny Bones. Like, you can still do it, but I'm going to get your Jeweled Lotus or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's good mental games, which is kind of what Black wants to do. And then also, if somebody goes off and you're second, you can slap Tiny Bones down and then just be like, okay, so I know that you kind of just went off. But now, even though you went off and you went and did something, there's a Tiny Bones. So, like, yeah, you got your commander, cool. But whenever you're done with your turn, too, if you tap your commander in any way, I'm just going to swing Tiny Bones in. And if you don't, I'm going to swing Tiny Bones in, and you have to choose, do you just get rid of your commander that you burned a lot of cards to get, or do I get your Jeweled Lotus?
Definitely. I think that's the big scary of Tiny Bones. I think if he had haste, he would be way up there. However, the fact that you got to have him down for a turn, it kind of telescopes, you know, what other players are going to have to do, which is okay. I don't mind having you be worried to drop your Zero Rock or not pay for your fish. Like,
yeah,
don't pay for the fish. Now I might get it. So,
the only complaint I have is Ragavan is a 2/1 for one and also has a dash cost. And then they were like, well, we'll give him Death Touch, but no dash cost. I kind of wish if they really wanted to make him, like, all-inclusive, whenever you dealt combat damage, you would mill their top card, and then you may cast target non-land permanent. I think that would have really made this card, you know, Black Ragavan. But since you kind of have to plan and kind of know strategically what you're doing with him, I think he's a high skill card where some people will get him and then just slap him down turn one and be like, oh no, this sucks. Like, I never get anything out of it. And then there'll be players that really, really know how to play him that will just be like, okay, every time I play him, I'm forcing a lose-lose situation where you either get rid of a good creature to a 1/1 one drop, or I steal your card. And potentially more cards after, you know?
Definitely. Now, again, I'm a big fan of him, to be honest. I think that in Blue Farm, he'll see play. Anything that could give me your Zero Rocks or your Mystical Remora or Mystic Remora is great.
Yeah, I really think that if anybody says Tiny Bones is not good, you just tell them that they're a bad player and then just not explain it and say you heard it on a podcast and, you know. And really, the reason that he's on a list is he's a little tiny skeleton in a tiny cowboy hat that can run on a piano. Like, that's why I wanted him in the list.
Definitely puts him in the top just for that.
Yeah, we just saw the art. We're like, we really need to figure out a way to make people think he's good so we can justify the art.
Cowboy hat doesn't.
Yeah. If he didn't have a cowboy hat, he wouldn't be on the list. Next one.
All right. So, Slick Shot Show-Off. This is pretty much just a quick one damage Tim the Draw to me. I think he's decent. The fact that he has haste is good. You could also hit for some more damage if you started casting spells. Not really a whole lot of strategy with him. I do think it's just a, like I said, a D decent, quick, I'm gonna cast him to get a draw type of card. I'm also really biased to Blue Farm, so that's kind of where I'm looking at them quick creatures with value later is kind of where I'm at with him. The fact that he's flying kind of ensures it. Or if you need a blocker, that's a thing too.
Yeah, he's stupid. He's going to be a multi-format all-star in my head. Like, he's Monastery Swift Speaker, which Monastery Swift, whatever. The one cost prowess haste. But he costs two, which immediately makes him not as good. But he has flying and haste. And then instead of just getting plus one, it's plus two until end of turn for just one colorless more. And you can plot it too. So I think Modern especially, you're going to see Slick Shot show off, hit the field, and then somebody's dead. For two, you can drop him, flying haste. No one's really going to have a flying blocker at that point.
Build your combo. Yeah.
And let's just say you gut shot. That's four damage. That's 25% of somebody's life. Let's say you're running Slick Shot Show Off and you have the Phyrexian Green pump spell. So you pump your creature with the pump skip spell that also pumps it. And let's just say somebody's playing Slick Shot Show Off and you don't know it, and they just have three cards in their hand. You can pass to an empty board, and then all of a sudden you'll take 10 damage flying. It's dumb. I think it's really gonna shine in other formats that are not Commander, but I think it'll be really good in Commander. It's just dumb. I really like these cards that Magic will be like, no, this is too good. Let's only one spell a turn. Let's only, do this. And then with this one, they're like, two, let's make it a 1/2. Let's give it flying. Let's give it haste. Let's pump it +2/+0 until end of turn every time you cast a non-creature spell. And let's also give it plot so that you can just do that for zero on some turn. If you just really, really want to go off,
I think that even in Kirkashima, you could...
And it's a wizard, yeah. Yeah. It's so dumb.
That would be considered a trigger, huh?
Yeah, so you get +4/+0 until end of turn in Kirkashima.
That's awesome.
I hate this thing. This is so dumb.
Like I said, it's one of those cards that's a quick slap, and then you can pump it to be death if you need to.
Yeah, I think this breaks certain formats. I don't think it really breaks Commander, because even in Takashima, it's you have to have Slick Shot Show Off, you have to have something that doubles wizard triggers, and then on top of it, you need to cast a whole bunch, which, I mean, you're going to be doing, well, at least it's not whenever you cast or copy, it's just cast.
Yeah.
But still, it's one of those things where it's just you could literally have nothing on the board, and let's say you have Slick Shot Show Off and just a lightning bolt. All of a sudden you're doing 6 damage to somebody for 3 mana. That's dumb.
I definitely think that it'll see some play. Standard wise, it's just too good in value to not see it.
Yeah.
And it gives red that extra damage it's going to need as far as attacking. I just see it being good.
Yeah, I mean, rarely is a card so good that I will speak about it even outside of Commander. Because that's what I care about is Commander. I don't play anything else. But there's times where I see a card and I'm just like, this is so stupid. It's going to be multi-format all-star. I think it will be good in Commander, but I think it'll just wreck the other formats,
Definitely one that's notable.
Yeah.
And it seems to not be really rare.
Yeah.
I've seen multiple pulls of it, so it's pretty quick.
I've seen more of those than I've seen High Noon or the other birds. I think this is really just the cowboy bird set. Like, all the birds are good.
Definitely. Ooh, ooh. Now this is one of those green, I'm gonna make big things, landfall, just green. Bristly bill spine sower. Landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, put a 1/1 counter on target creature. For 5, 3 colorless, 2 green, double the number of 1/1 counters on each creature you control. Landfall. That's really all I can say with it. Like, landfall, doubling season, parallel lives, silly things.
Yeah. Don't you put 1/1 counters on Scoot Swarm?
I don't think so. I'm not 100. I'm gonna look it up.
Because to me, that's what matters.
I think Scoot Swarm is just copies of Scoot Swarm.
Scoot Swarm. Oh, yeah. So it's always a 1/1. Yeah.
But with this, that's, I mean, really, that's what the format needed, was another double all counters.
Yeah, so I don't know if this will be seen in CDH. I think it is a little too slow. I definitely think he will go in landfall decks, and he can be a mono green, fun, high casual landfall commander. The other thing about landfall that you kind of have to remember is, like, if I play a sac land, I go get another land. So it's 2 landfalls, which is pretty good. Also, you could maybe see him in a Korvold, where all of a sudden you have to deal with a giant Korvold out of nowhere.
I think the cool thing is, if in a pinch, all you have is him, he can take those 1/1 counters.
Yeah. So you can cast him for a green and your 0-drop mana rock. And then turn 2, all of a sudden you have a 4/4 if you play a sac land that can swing. And you haven't even spent your mana yet. Like,
it's interesting.
Yeah.
It is a higher dollar card in the set.
Yeah, it's like $15.
Just interesting in general. I think in casual you'll see it a lot more than your competitive. Another thing we've got to think about, this is in standard.
Yeah.
Like, silly.
This is another card that's so good that I'm just like, it will make me talk about standard and modern, you know?
Definitely silly in some of the formats that it's going to be legal in. Do I think they'll ban it? I don't think so.
No.
I do think that it's a lot of value for 2, and I think that as you get further into the game, if you need to swing out, you could do so with this card. Like,
yeah, really, I'm just glad that they made it legendary. If it wasn't legendary, it'd be much more broken in the other formats. I think the fact that it's legendary will make it probably not even worth running in other formats because there's more broken things.
Yeah.
I think we will see it in standard. Really, why is it on the list? It's a cactus druid. Like, cactuses are cool. I wish he would have been in a cowboy hat. I understand why he's not, though.
I don't understand why he's not. But that's me personally.
Yeah, this card sucks. He doesn't have a cowboy hat on. So let's just move on. Terrible card. Waste of $15. Now this is a bear in a cowboy hat, and there's cactuses and axolotls on the card. And I thought he was holding a cell phone at first, taking a selfie. He's just, I guess, looking at a little baby axolotl. So he's not taking a selfie. I thought he was, like, looking at the player breaking the fourth wall, and he's just like, my God, you're ugly. Like. that's really all I have to say about the card. I think we can go on now. Like, clearly, no, I'm just kidding. So this card is really good. I have been working on a deck specifically for him in Commander. I actually forgot the name, so I'm going to have to look him up. Grolnok the Omnivore. This card breaks that deck. So with Grolnok, whenever you exile a permanent from your deck, it goes into exile with a crypt counter on it, and you may cast it. What Doc Alark Grizzled Genius says is, spells you cast from your graveyard or from exile cost 2 less to cast. Plotting cards from your hand cost 2 less to cast. So he's good in the current set with the plot mechanic, but really what you do with him is you exile him with a Croak Clamp counter, and you exile multiple cards, either with some way, either a card that mills half of your deck, you self-mill yourself for a whole bunch. Like, there's very easy ways to mill yourself in green-blue, whether it's the Hermit Druid combo, Cephalid combo with Lightning Boots. It's easy. And then all of a sudden, you have your entire deck, and for green-blue, you can cast your entire deck of permanents for 2 less. And how much... What do mana rocks usually cost? Two colorless, right?
Yeah.
So every single CDH mana rock that's in your deck is now free. Like,
yeah.
He, as long as you mill him, he's basically an Adnaz in Simic.
He also doesn't say with a minimum of 1.
Yeah.
So it's...
There's 0.
It
yeah.
is 0.
Yeah. I don't think that he himself will be a commander. I don't think he's going to break any of the current Simic decks. But he's such a powerful card, because it just says 2 less to cast. So I think this is going to be kind of a sleeper card that, yeah, while it's really good in the Frog deck, it's not really a deck that you saw played much before. You'd see people try to play it purely because it's just a Frog. But now there's this guy, and then there's also the Poison Dart Frog that is a Birds of Paradise for 2. That has Reach and Death Touch, if you want it to have Death Touch. And it taps for mana. And usually, if you're playing Frog deck, you're playing a Verdant Cat, like Verdant, not Verdant Catacombs, Verdant Crossroads, that gives everything haste.
Concordant
Crossroads, yeah. So you're just going to go off with him. I think he's good enough to where we're going to start seeing new decks purely because he exists, and that's why he's on the list for me.
I think that having the axolotls on the card really just made it happen.
Yeah, this is another one where I saw the art, and I was just like, he's a legendary bear druid. He's a bear in a cowboy hat. There's axolotls. I'm going to make up things to make sure that he's on the list.
No, but on a real note, like... not having a limit to 1 really makes this thing just silly.
He's also a 2/3 body, so he's hard to remove.
Yeah.
The difference between 2 and 3 damage is huge. I mean, the only thing that really could make him better is if he was little itty-bitty and he was running across a piano. That's it. Like.
Yeah, definitely.
This is another commander pick. So this is Eartha Jo, Frontier Mentor. 2 colorless, red and white. When Eartha Jo enters the battlefield, create a 1/1 red mercenary token with tap. Target creature you control gets +1/+0 until end of turn. Activate as a sorcery. So when she comes out, she's 4 for 2 different bodies. A 2/4 body and a 1/1 body. However, when you activate an ability that targets a creature or player, copy that ability.
Oh.
You may choose new targets for that copy. So notice that's not an ability that targets a creature or a player, or like a creature you control. It's, if I target anything with an ability, I copy it for free. It's not, if you target, pay 1, copy that ability. It's just, this happens, you know?
This is my first time reading this card, and for 4, you get 2 creatures with the possibility of putting a 2/2 on something later on. is silly. Plus, you can use her as... let me see here. Let me look at it one more time. Activated ability of target. I like it. I think that it's decent.
Yeah.
And it's one of those ones that is should have been probably rare, but the fact that it's uncommon makes it more accessible, and really people may just look over it because of that.
Yeah, I mean, what I always think about this is, you know, Rocco is an uncommon, and he's a great commander. You know?
Yeah.
So I really think what holds this back is it's Boros colors. That's the problem. It's not as broken as Winota, but I bet it has a place in Winota. Because you get two non-humans, because it's a red mercenary, it's not a red human, and you can copy abilities. So any ETBs that you target anything, you double it. So there's a lot of Boros cards, like in, I think Eowyn in Lord of the Rings, you exile the biggest creature on your opponent's board, on target player's board. So all of a sudden it's just like you exile two creatures. Well, no, I don't.
Is it?
No, yeah, ETBs would count because if you solitude, all of a sudden now you're getting two solitude.
That's what I was thinking.
You're targeting, yeah, you're targeting. For four, is this going to be a game-breaking CDH commander? I don't think so, but I think people could make it, and it would be pretty crazy. The only thing is, it's only abilities, so it doesn't count spells. So this is not doubling your swords or your paths. I really think that's the only problem, but whenever you activate ability that targets a creature or player...
Oh,
does not Paradise Mantle, Springleaf Drone, does that target a creature?
I believe so. Because I think you tap target creature and add.
Tap an untapped creature you control, so you don't target it.
Okay.
I'm sure that there's a way to break this, I just don't know what that way is right now. Like, if you could get double Springleaf Drone triggers, that would be stupid. So I'm glad that that doesn't work.
Anything that does something as it comes out and then has a static later on for something definitely makes it noteworthy, at least. Definitely an interesting card.
I am sure that there is a artifact out there that you target a creature and tap it and... Oh, wait. Does this work with Agatha's Soul Cauldron? Exile target creature card from a graveyard. Whenever you activate an ability that targets a creature or player, copy that ability. Yeah, so this doubles Agatha's Soul Cauldron. Exile target card from a graveyard. Whenever a creature card is exiled this way, put a 1/1 counter on target creature you control.
It has those abilities.
Yeah, so you then get two different abilities and two 1/1 counters that you can put on new targets with that. So with her, you just tap Agatha's Soul Cauldron, and then all of a sudden, two of your creatures have two new abilities.
Yeah, and Agatha's is... I wouldn't say it's top in the format right now, but it is definitely one of the ones that has been a staple now for some decks.
Wait. Activate that targets a creature or a player. Exile target creature card from a graveyard. You gain 2 life. Oh, okay. Well, so Deathrot Shaman would just give you 4 life. Never mind. I was about to be like, does it work with lands? Because then you get 2 mana from Deathrot Shaman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure that this is something that will get broken eventually. I just don't know what it is now. I just know it has the ability. And if it's not broken now, it'll be one of those cards that, like, every time Magic prints a card that targets a creature or a player that's an ability, they'll have to remember that this card exists. Which is... That means it's a great card.
Would it do double damage?
If it targets a...
Is it a creature that has to be...
Well, it's an ability. So, like, Oh, wait. You could touch the spirit realm and then do two permanents with touch the spirit realm. One touch the spirit realm cast.
And it's in the colors.
Yeah, and it's in the colors.
So you can drop off two rules of law. It might be good for maybe mitigating your own rule of laws.
Well, it works. It works with yeah, and then also it works with High Noon. High Noon, all of a sudden you're doing 10 damage to somebody for 5. So turn 4 you drop her. Turn 5 you just bolt somebody for 10 for 5.
Like, I hate to go back.
Oh,
to
wait,
it.
No, because you can't sacrifice High Noon twice. Yeah, I don't know, but it's good.
Yeah.
I'm sure our lovely listeners will know exactly how this is broken, and they'll tell us in the comments.
Again, put it in the comments. Maybe it's not even worth talking about,
yeah.
But just stuff we think is interesting.
The one thing I don't like about this card is her cowboy hat is on her back, not on her head.
It's a shame.
Yeah, that's why it's
so
common. I think if she was wearing the cowboy hat, it'd be a rare.
Is that a tumbleweed back there, or is she just jumping around?
She's on a cliff side.
See, the tumbleweed would have made it better, too.
Yep. Sucks.
Ooh, man.
Yeah,
this one here.
Yeah, Kellen the Kid. So this is... People are going to try this as a CDH commander. I don't know how to break it yet, but I think that Magic has been really scared to print a good Bant commander. I think that they printed Derevi... And then they were like, oh, Bant color combinations are really scary. Because Bant can protect the board, mana ramp, and still counter. So Kellen the Kid is green, white, blue. 3 mana, legendary creature, human, fairy, rogue. Flying, lifelink. Whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, you may cast a permanent spell with equal or lesser mana value from your hand without paying its mana cost. If you don't, you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. So it does not see itself, so whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand. So he has to be on the board, so he doesn't count himself if he's the commander. But he's kind of like a mini Kodama with spells that you cast from anywhere. So he's in Brain Freeze range. He's in Savine's range, like colors. So at the very least, these are spells that you know are going to be comboed together, that you can just drop value from your hand. He's not an Underworld Breach. So if he was red, that would be dumb.
So hear me out. We talked about a card already. Plotting,
yeah,
isn't casting from your hand.
Yeah.
Now, which wouldn't matter. However, if you don't, you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield.
Yeah.
So
and not tapped. It just
put it.
Yeah. Just go.
So let's say you put out for a sleeve bill. And then now you casted him for 0, you put out your land, he already comes out with being a 4/4. Put a 1/1.
Yeah.
So he'd be a 3/3. But still, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about like what cards are good. So I was thinking about Beseech the Mirror. It's bargain, lets you cast something for 4 for free, but that's black. So if we're thinking about this as just a CDH Bant commander, I'm trying to think of things that you cast from the graveyard. Really, all I'm thinking about is Savine's. You can use adventures too.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you put things on an adventure, you cast them from exile.
So when I see a card like this, the first thing I think of is Draenith. It needs to happen immediately.
Yeah, and it can run Draenith Magistrate.
Yeah.
It's not in red, so it can't It does not have red and black, so once a Dranath Magistrate comes out, all it can really do is Chain of Vapor it. So that is something that is not great about Kellen the Kid. I think people will play it. I think people that are smarter than me have already figured out how to break it. I just know that this plus Savines is good. So, like, you can Kellen the Kid, have Thassa's in your hand, cast Savines for flashback, drop Thassa for free, uncounterable. Like, what are you doing with the Savines flashback? I'm not too sure, but I think this alone will cause us to see new Thassa's combos. And that's scary.
I think new Thassa or even possible landfall things.
Yeah.
And it gives you some extra colors than green, just green. But,
I mean, this and Daka Lock is really good because if you cast things from not your hand, they cost you less.
Yeah.
So, you're not really going to run Garlock in this deck because a combo that requires your commander, a card, and then another card, and then all you get to do is cast from your hand for free. Not great. Oh, wait, you cast without paying its mana cost, you put land cards out. So yeah, people can still counter. So if you drop a free Thassa's, you're still casting it for free.
Yeah.
So this will probably make people run Boromir more. It's a card that potentially can change the format if it's good, and I'm sure it's good, I just don't know how it's good yet.
I think that it's pretty strong for that color combination,
yeah,
at the very least.
I think Bant is one of those colors that they're afraid to make good commanders in, because just Derevi, they were like, that's too good, and then they never printed a good one after that, and now they have, so I think we'll see these colors come back.
Definitely. Oh, Vraska. This is a pet card for me. When I first started playing Magic, it was one of the first Planeswalkers I personally got. However, to see her as a creature, pretty cool. So what she reads, Death Touch, whenever a non-token creature an opponent controls dies, you may pay one. If you do, return that card to the battlefield tapped under your control. It's a treasure artifact. With tap, sacrifice this artifact, add one mana of any color, and it loses all other card types. What a silly card. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it is a 3/3/3 legendary Death Touch. And whenever a non-token creature an opponent controls dies, you may pay one is really the only thing that holds it back. Needing to have mana open in case things die kind of sucks. I think that's really the only thing holding it back. Because if you do, return that card to the battlefield tapped under your control. So it's not a token. You have that card. You control that card. And it's now a treasure artifact with you tap it and you sacrifice. So it's not a creature. So
you,
like,
can't swing, but yeah, you get statics.
But like, let's say you kill your opponent's Dockside. Now you have a Dockside that also himself is a treasure. And the key thing about this is it changes something from a creature to a non-creature artifact. So there's a lot of things that want to copy artifacts that would not copy creatures. I just like that it opens up a lot of silly combos, and you physically take the card. You don't turn it into a token.
I can't think of any cards at the moment that you don't want to stay in the graveyard. However, you can pull pieces before they hit the graveyard out onto your side and make them just that much more sticky to try to get rid of if it's a combo piece for the other player. I know that in Korvald, a lot of Korvald players like to use that reanimate to bring back Dockside. Yeah. So if you hit it before it hits the graveyard, like, or as it goes,
yeah,
maybe you can get it. For one mana? I mean, that stops a lot of stuff.
They can reanimate on top of your ability, though. So, like, let's say
I don't think so.
Well, Dockside hits. Whenever an opponent controls dies, you may pay one. So that's the trigger. And then on top of the trigger, they can instant reanimate. So
is
it's all on the stack.
Instant?
I think it is. Let's see. I'll look it up.
If so, then that may change my thought on it a little bit. However...
oh, no, it's a sorcery.
Yeah. I think
most reanimates are sorcery speed.
Which, you know, puts it just that much faster, so you're able to kind of snipe those cards as they hit. And even then, I mean, it'll have to be on the field, but you don't tap her, so she can be used immediately.
Yeah, the only problem is you have to keep the one open, which isn't hard. I mean, if you have a soul ring, that soul ring can just be a treasure after that. The other thing is you get those ETBs because they return to the battlefield. So all ETBs. I think the other thing that kind of keeps this card back is you can't steal commanders. Like, let's say you kill a commander. You can pay the one, and then on the zone change...
They can take it.
They will just decide, it's changing zones, I'm just going to put it in the command zone.
I mean, still though, you can snipe it from the graveyard, so if they're trying to put their combo as from grave to field, it doesn't happen much, but it's one of those things that's instant speed that you just kind of snipe through.
As long as you have one mana up, no one's going to try to reanimate combos. So, like, if I have a Dockside that I know I can do a reanimation loop, but I see a Vraska out, I'm just going to go, okay, I'm just not going to do that now. Like, it took my option away.
Mm. Not really a whole lot to say about her other than the fact that you can snipe those cards, but... Personally, like I said, she's just one of those previous planeswalkers that kind of hits a soft spot. I like her.
Yeah, Jace has good taste. Molten Duplication. So this card is basically cards that we already see in the format, but you can... make a copy of an artifact or a creature instead of just the one. So this card is just strictly an upgrade Snapcast Mage. What's the mono red combo where you can just flash in and duplicate a spell and then you just win?
It's a dual caster?
Yeah, dual caster combo. I'm not prepared, so I'm gonna look up that card.
Create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control. Except it's an artifact in addition to its other types.
Yeah, so it's Twin Flame, but you can copy a creature or an artifact. So people were running Heat Shimmer before, and Heat Shimmer is 3. That creates a token that's a copy of target creature. So now you potentially have 3 versions of the same card, which redundancy is really good in CDH, but this one is strictly an upgrade. Twin Flame is 2, and it has Strive, but no one's using that Strive effect in CDH. They're just using the 2.
So with my play group, I'm not loved too much for my Karakashima deck. I do believe that this is a Karakashima staple.
Are you running Twin Flame right now?
I'm running Twin Flame and Heat Shimmer.
Yep, then you just either run a third one or take out Heat Shimmer.
I think that, to be honest, it would be worth for 2 just to have it instead of another spell.
Yeah.
Or creature, whichever. I think that... I'm probably going to look for this. I don't think I pulled any of that one. However, it's going to go in.
Yeah, and it also makes a copy of an artifact, too. So if you have some crazy artifact, you have two of them now. Yeah, anything that goes... Really, anything that goes like, hey, you can copy a creature. Well, now you can copy an artifact. So you have doubled the pool of cards that you could potentially combo with now in CDH, which is huge because basically every card ever printed. So this itself, now there's several thousand extra cards that you can consider comboing with creating a token.
Or just even a Dockside.
Yeah. Or just dual caster mage.
Okay.
Or you can Dockside the red mirror that copies a creature and then it ETBs again. And then you can molten duplication that, and I think it even taps for red, so you can get another Dockside plus an extra red man.
Just one of those cards that ends up being a broken piece of the combo. Like,
yeah.
I like it a lot.
Red has gotten a lot of love lately, and I would like to see the same love for green. I think red was a color that was definitely a color that you just ran in addition that gave you a little bit of extra stuff. And now red is like, red can hold its own. Red is a good color on its own. Yeah, so I'm here for it. It's good. Alright, next card. Loot, the key to everything. I don't know if he's cute or if he just hits that uncanny valley. Like, he's cute. I kind of want to hug him, but I kind of also want to crush his face with my foot.
I feel like he would either be the most snuggly thing or eat your face.
I don't like that he's showing his teeth. I feel like that was a bad choice from the artist, where they were like, hey, let's make a really cute Furby that's going to be this, like, big lore piece that is going to open up space travel, basically. And he's going to be a baby of basically, like, the Anunnaki on Earth. And the guy was like, cool, got it. Going to make him look like Furby. Not give him a nose, give him rows of horrifying sharp teeth. And they were just like, yeah, let's print this. Like, art aside, I think he's going to be a CDH commander. I think people are going to try to run him. He's green, blue, red, so tricolor, which is already good. Legendary creature, beast, noble. Word 1. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of card types among other non-land permanents you control. You may play those cards this turn.
I think we've seen something like this before. Dare I say Atraxa with red?
So Atraxa is an ETB and she's 7. This is 3.
Oh, it's at the beginning.
Yeah.
So it just happens.
and you don't... So it's exile the top X cards of your library. It's not just one of each type. So... You can't run him as a hidden commander in Atraxa, but he can get up to 6 extra cards a turn, I believe. So if you have loot out and you pass turn, he's a creature, so he himself will exile the top 1 card of your library, and you just have access to that extra. But if you're in CDH, you probably have a creature, you probably have an artifact.
Artifacts, for sure.
Probably have an enchantment really early. So that's 3 extra cards.
Not to mention, you know, what if it has both of those types?
Yeah.
So let's say you have an enchantment creature.
Yeah.
There's quite a few.
Yeah.
In green.
Well, there's Destiny Weaver that makes creatures and enchantments uncounterable. Like...
What about, was it Nyx Bloom Ancient?
Nyx Bloom Ancient, yeah. I like this because I think Braid of Fire is a cool card. And Braid of Fire is now, you have access to a bunch of things on your upkeep. And you have a bunch of mono red mana. So this guy's kind of scary because you can just get cards and then burn through them with red mana. I've also seen there's cards that give you a bunch of upkeeps and duplicate your upkeeps. So all of a sudden you're just constantly getting mana and cards. I'm sure he's easy to break. I just don't know how yet. He also counts planeswalkers, he counts battles, and there's really only one battle that's worth running in CDH, and that battle is green.
Yeah.
So it's good. I forgot what the other types were. I was looking it up, but I believe realistically the limit is 6, because I don't think we can run conspiracy cards, like conspiracy subtype cards in CDH. And he doesn't count lands too. But let's say, you know, on flavor, you play Treasure Vault with Loot the Key to Everything. That's an artifact land, so you get an extra card every turn because of the land you have.
You still have to cast them.
Yeah, you do. So, that would be stupid if you...
Yeah, so, I mean, you still need mana to do it, but you're in mana ramp colors with Dockside.
Yeah, you're in green, red mana ramp, and also access to... access to counters. So it's basically like Paco, but with only your stuff. So like you could potentially exile cards and have a combo on board and literally show everybody that you have a fierce guardianship.
Oh, for that turn.
Yeah. So you just be like, hey, just so everybody knows, I'm going to cast this and you can see the counters that I have.
Yeah.
Try to stop me.
Also delve in that far in your deck with those options. It's almost like a second hand at some point.
Yeah, a second hand that you have to burn through that turn.
Or not. It just, I mean, having it there is good regardless.
Yeah. I mean, so the only thing that's not great is if you exile your Thassa's, you're just like, oh boy, like I have to play this turn. I don't really know if this color does Thassa's. I think this color is more, this is probably an infinite turns deck.
I see that.
I feel like Trouble in Pairs kind of took that option away, though.
Yeah, and Trouble in Pairs is played in just about every deck that can run it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see people play it purely because loot is cute. I think it'll be cool.
I think that's the big thing.
Yeah.
A Death Furby sounds fun to play.
Yeah, he has a face that I want to hit with a hammer. I don't really know why, but I hate it. It's cute. Like, I would definitely have a plush of it, but its mouth better be closed. So, Pest Control. It is a white and a black. Unfortunately, it's a sorcery. Destroy all non-land permanents with mana value 1 or less. And they also gave it cycling. So I think Pest Control is a really good, oh no, emergency reset button. I'm seeing a lot of people overvalue it. I think the color combination is keeping it back because it's white-black. But keep in mind, this does give Blue Farm the ability to just go, oh, okay, I didn't get to drop Mana Rocks, and I have Heuristic Study. Let me wipe the board.
Yeah, and I really wish there was a creature that could get those cards out of graveyard.
Yeah.
With a cowboy hat that's running on a...
Yep. Yeah, destroy all non-land permanents with mana value 1 or less. Like, this was pretty good, just destroying creatures. But now it's like, oh yeah, all of those early game mana rocks that you dropped, they're gone. I was able to drop an Arcane Signet, so I'm going to be able to do this, you know. or you could just go last and say like, oh, I have a white and I also have a Lotus Petal. Well, now no one gets their zero drop rocks, you know.
I mean, I could definitely see it... I could definitely see it for that guy or lady playing seat four.
Yeah, yeah.
And having two mana in that, it's like, go ahead.
Yeah.
Drop it all.
I think it has the same problem with Pick Your Poison, where it's like, this is a card that I put in my deck planning that I will be behind, you know? Which I think Blue Farm can smartly play and go, oh, okay, this is in my opening hand, I'm not going first, I'll keep it. I'll let everybody just go off turn one, and then all of a sudden I'll be able to wipe the board, and then now I'm ahead. I think it'll just give people that are in seat three and four a lot more consistency. Really the question here is, though, if you have this in your opening hand, why are you not just mulliganing and getting something much better?
Like I said, one of the big problems as well is losing that dice roll or losing that seeding and your fourth.
Ugh, dice rolls for...
Either way it goes. For whatever happened before, now you're seat four. And this gives you the play of all of these other guys or ladies that has all of that fast mana and that are going to really just shine turn one. You're like, great, I'm going to hit it. And then you drop them all down back to your level, which you knew was going to happen, but they had no idea. Now they have an issue.
Yeah, the other thing I like about this is, let's say you draw it real late in the game, you can cycle it for two.
Draw a card, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It is the entire package in a card. It is really good early, and it doesn't lose its value late if you cast it late, and it also doesn't lose its value if it's completely worthless.
And to be honest, if I cast this and somebody wanted to counter it, I don't think I would feel that bad for it not going through.
Yeah, I think we'll see this in Azban a lot, because now you have, if things go so far south, you have Pest Control on turn two, and you have Culling Ritual on turn four, which is really good, you know?
Yeah. Tarnation Vista. So, Tarnation Vista reads, Tarnation Vista enters the battlefield tapped. As it enters, choose a color. Add one mana of chosen color for one and tapping it. For each color among monocolored permanents you control, add one mana of that color. So, I don't like that it comes in tapped. However, this is potentially tap one for netting four mana at some point in the game. It is not legendary, so in other formats, this could be run with the full sweep of four. So, do I think it's the end-all, be-all land? No. However, this is a very decent land for even some CEDH commanders like Sisse that wants to have that massive amount of mana value and has those cards that come in that are monocolored legendary, gives it that extra push. So if you have Sisse being one, Tiny Bones could be two. If you play Ragavan, which you probably do in those colors, you would have a three. Delighted Halfling would be four. So I think that with this card, again, not the end-all be-all of lands, but I do think that it is a very good land.
So, usually whenever I read a land that says enters the battlefield tapped, choose a color. Well, really, as long as the moment I read enters the battlefield tapped, I'm just like, oh, okay, next. You know, like, I did do that on this, and I kind of regretted it, because as it enters, choose a color. So a lot of these effects, you only get colorless, and then for, like, three and tap, you get colors, but you have to net like four or five to make this useful. I don't really get what you're saying with Sisse. To me, this is purely monocolor. So, as it enters, you choose a color. So let's say you're playing Fiddlebender, and you say white. Later it will tap and add a white, or you pay one tap for each color among monocolored permanents you control. Add one mana of that color.
So...
Oh, no, I see what you're saying with this. Okay. I thought this was purely a monoblack. So for each color among monocolored permanents
you control, add
one mana of that color. Oh, so it's not for mono decks.
No, it's not monocolor at all.
It is Sisse and Ajila. Okay. I completely read this card wrong. I thought this was like Crick and Magda,
no.
Where if you had five red dwarfs, you could pay one and tap, and you get five red. This is if you have five monocolored permanents on the battlefield, and that's monocolored permanents, so that counts like Carpet of Flowers. That counts
not legendaries.
Yeah, that counts Ristic Study. Like that counts fish. Okay, this is dumb. I think it is too slow for Blue Farm, but like let's say you have a fish, an Esper Sentinel, and something else. A carp, not in like Blue Farm, but like Fish, Esper, Sentinel, Carpet of Flowers, or like Fish, Esper, Sentinel, Ragavan. This taps two taps for three.
Well, it's not even two, it's one for two.
But you have to tap that card itself, so it's two.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, let's say you have a Soul Ring.
Yeah.
I mean, it's color fixing for those commanders that really are too fast already in a land. Like, I think that it's going to see some CEDH play, and I think that the being tapped, whereas it's a minor deterrent, I don't think that it's going to matter in the grand scheme of things. We're already going towards some of those scry lands. Is it a scry land? It's those ones that came out that are... They come in tapped.
Oh, and you surveil the surveil lands. Yeah.
Surveil lands. Sorry. Is it a good turn 5 play? Probably not. Is it a great turn 1? Or turn 2, possibly? Maybe. I
think this just gets better the longer the game goes on.
For sure.
Yeah, I see what you're saying about Sisse now. Like... I think you can pretty much get to the point where you're tapping Tarnation Vista for most colors you need to Sisse, and as long as you have Derevi, you can just keep going.
Yeah. I didn't even think about Derevi.
Yeah,
that's, and it's a staple in Sisse's. So it's like, I feel like it's what...
Oh, well... You can't flicker it, because it does come in tap, so it has to be an untap situation like Derevi.
I think Derevi untaps.
Yeah, Derevi just does untap, but like I was thinking like a lot of Sisse does like Mount Doom combos, but this, whenever it enters the battlefield, it enters tapped.
And again, if it's just to set up a turn for you to have 3 mana the next turn, or 2 mana the next turn off of one land, it's just strong. I see it being a good piece in general.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I read this completely wrong. I thought it was like a Shrine of Nyx or something like that, but like a slow Shrine of Nyx. Yeah, that's good.
Now, I haven't played Standard in a long time. However, the fact that you can mana fix to that degree in Standard... with 4 of them is interesting. I think you'll see a lot more multicolored decks that can maneuver around that.
It's flexible too. It's whatever you need at your current game state. So like, let's say you have a dual land that taps for red and green, and you're Rocco and you need white, and you just don't have white anywhere. You just be like, I need white. And it comes in tapped, which is terrible for CDH. But I think this is good enough to where it coming in tapped can basically, we can kind of agree that this is like an arcane signet in your land slot, where it's like, you are paying two to get it out, but for the rest of the game, it's really good.
It's going to shine in all of those Woobird decks, for yeah. sure.
Like, I would personally just look at this card and be like, yeah, I'm running 28 lands, but I have a Tarnation Vista, so I need to run 29. And I need to say, Tarnation Vista, while it does have the land subtype, it's a mana rock. You know, it's a second Arcane Signet that's better than Arcane Signet.
Potential for higher.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a land.
Yeah. You can't counter it. You can't turn it off with Collector Oof.
And if you destroy it with, like, a Strip Mine, thank God it's not my guy's Cradle or something, you know? Like, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's Bloom Tender for one.
It's good.
In a lot of CDH decks, a lot of CDH decks just run monocolored permanents. There's not a lot of permanents. Like, if you're running this, if you have Mana Dorks, you have green. If you're running blue, you have Fish and Rhystic Study. If you're running white, you have Esper Sentinel. If you're running red, you have Ragavan. If you're running black, you have Tiny Bones now. There's staple things you're putting out that are monocolored. Yeah, I think this is pretty good.
I think you'll see it.
Yeah.
Collector's Cage, Hideaway 5. When this artifact enters the battlefield, look at the top 5 cards of your library, exile one face down, then put the rest on the bottom in any random order, or in a random order. Tap, pay one tap, put a 1/1 counter on target creature you control. Then, if you control 3 or more creatures with different powers, you may play the exiled card without paying its mana cost for 2, 1 colorless, 1 white.
So this basically can turn Peer into the Abyss with some setup into a
3.
2 colorless, a white, and a black. Because you're probably tutoring to top if you're going to play this in CDH, hiding away the thing that you have, and then you for one manipulate the power of the creature, and then you may play it. There were cards in Innistrad that had Coven where you wanted to have 3 power things. I don't think we're gonna see a return of Coven. Like, I don't think there's gonna be a deck built around that, but like, there are mechanics that want you to do that and enable that. Plus, for potentially 3, you get to cast something giant for free. At instant speed, right? Because
it's an ability.
It. Yeah.
I think...
You may play. I still think that it gets around casting times. Because it tells you you can play this right now.
Without paying its mana cost. Even if you don't tutor to top, you're delving 5 cards in.
Yeah.
And with that, as you play, you should have at least 2 creatures with different values. And if you do have that third creature, let's say they're all 1/1s, you can just tap it. It triggers, and then I believe it will also be able to be cast for free.
Yeah.
So, I think that it's a good sneaky card for 2 mana.
It also is just 2 mana, 1 tap, put a 1/1 counter on a creature you control, too. So, this with Agatha's Soul Cauldron like it's the hideaway is good, and then once you cast that card, it's still useful for the rest of the game.
Yeah, you can still use it. And then if you blink it, even more crazy stuff happens there. So
I think we will probably see this in Heliod combo decks. I don't know if Fiddlebender is still played. I know Fiddlebender was a really good mono color deck. I think Heliod himself is just the commander now for the most part in mono white. Or Ao the Dawnstar. This is something with Fiddlebender you can turn a one cost mana rock into, and then all of a sudden you were hiding part of your combo and putting 1/1 counters on stuff.
I like the fact that the information is pretty much hidden. So
yeah, you exile it face down.
So you don't know exactly what I'm doing at that point. You
yeah.
just know that it's bad.
Yeah.
Which is great for me because it's just good. I like the fact that it's unknown information. Anything that's unknown, I feel, is real good as far as those politic plays sometimes. Or just outright. I mean, you
yeah.
could have everything set up, throw it out, tap it, and cast your spell.
I feel like for the most part, you're going to have a 3-power commander, mostly. And then if you're running commanders, if you're playing commander, you have 1/1 something. Either a mana dork, an Esper Sentinel. If you have Esper Sentinel, let's just say this doesn't go in Blue Farm, in my opinion, but let's say you have Esper Sentinel, Timna, Ragavan on board, and you play Collector's Cage. You put a 1/1 counter on Timna. She's a 3/3 lifelink now.
I was thinking that too.
And then you get to cast your Hideaway card. And if it's Blue Farm, that Hideaway card is good. Yeah.
It could be your Adnaz, if
yeah.
you wanted to run Adnaz for free.
Could be your Teferi, and then all of a sudden
and then if you blink it, you could continue to go with those cards.
You continue, because when it ETBs, you hide away 5 again.
So let's say you have Teferi. Well, if you have Teferi, it's going to be scary anyway. Let's say you sneak out your Displacer.
Yeah. So in that setup, the moment you have 3 different powers, you just put the 1/1 counter on the highest power at that point.
And just go.
And then it becomes, I literally play every single card in my deck for 1 for free. Because you put it on the bottom in a random order. So you play everything except your lands. You just leave your lands in the deck. Because you can't hide away your lands. Because you may play.
You can play lands.
No, you'd exile them. You play one land. Because you can put multiple lands, but you can only play one. That's why it says you may play, because it still follows the restrictions.
Mm.
But you could still exile all of your lands. So this would give Azorius potential silenced Thassa combo.
Yeah, Thassa line.
Yeah.
And Azor.
That's pretty good.
I think it's cool.
Now, like, do I know how you would get there and get the mana to do that? Flickering stuff? No, I don't. You'd probably need, like, Teferi, Kitten. It's hard to...
Well, once you got Teferi, Kitten, you could just run the... you could just run the Zero Rock loot.
Yeah.
But I do think that...
I mean, I guess Hullbreaker Horde?
Maybe. I think that the Delve... Yeah, because that would give you your... Because
you would net infinite colorless with your mana rocks, and then it would give you a way to draw the rest of your deck and play it.
Technically not draw, but...
Yeah.
Sift through.
Well, and which is... It's better than draw, because then you don't have to worry about Bowmaster. You do have to worry that there's no Dranth Magistrate, because you do have to cast... Like, play it from exile. I think it has potential. I think really Short Cry will love this. I think this is a Azorius card that Azorius does have a hard way to close, and this gives it a way to close. Because you cast it for free, you extort Blind Obedience every time you cast something for free, and you're casting your entire deck for free.
Yeah.
So as long as you have one and a white, you just win.
I like it.
Yeah.
I think that it's a very interesting card on an artifact.
Yeah.
Other than that, I just thought it was an interesting tumbleweedish looking card.
Yeah, the art is another reason it was here. Yeah. I think that's the last one. Yep, it is. Cool. So that is our list. If you guys think that we really missed something, let us know. If there was anything that you didn't agree with, leave the comments below. I won't read them, but you will give me comments on the video, which will feed the algorithm.
I'll read it.
Okay, he'll read it. I'll point and laugh.
I won't agree with it.
Yeah.
But I'll read it. What I would say is also, if there's a cuter card in the set that may have a cowboy hat that we missed, also send a picture down below.
Well, I don't think they can send pictures, because that would be really bad.
Well, or note it.
Yeah, just
we'll look it up.
Just put the name. If you don't agree with smashing loot in the face with a hammer, tell us what you'd smash him in the face with instead of a hammer.
Wiffle bat.
Wiffle bat, that's possible. Doesn't cause as much damage, but still. Okay, well, we've been talking for almost 2 hours. If you've listened to this, probably this is a sleep podcast that you turned on and you slept to our velvety soft voice. And
please hit that subscribe while you're sleeping.
When you wake up, hit like and hit subscribe and comment. Feed the algorithm. All right.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Bye.